From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson, and we've seen this before. A black man dies in police custody, and it's all caught on video. Like Eric Garner in New York, George Floyd's last words in Minneapolis have become a rallying cry for protesters. Floyd's death has sparked outrage that's consumed the entire country, with protests in 350 cities in all 50 states. We want to start our show today by listening to people on the front lines of those protests.
What we saw was a black man who was lynched. Right? They didn't use rope. He used his knee. Mr. Floyd should have not died. He should still be alive today.
That's right.
Say his name!
George Floyd!
Say his name!
George Floyd!
It'll be sanctioned if nothing is done. It'll be sanctioned if it's business as usual. It'll be sanctioned if the history that we have in this country and in this community of ignoring black bodies and the death of black bodies at the hands of officers acting under the color of law is ignored.
All hands on deck!
All hands on deck!
I want to accomplish this. I want black men, black women, black people to live in freedom the way that everyone else deserves.
I am sick and tired of coming to these protests over and over again. And for my white brothers and sisters, silence is violence. I say this over again. Silence is violence.
I cannot tell you how hard it is to grieve and fight at the same time. Who does that? I don't want to be out here, but I gotta be out here. And if I have to, I will suffer the consequences due to COVID-19. But God is gonna cover us, because this is a time for change. And it's time for change now. No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice! No peace!
No justice! No peace!
No justice! No peace!
No justice! No peace!
The morning after George Floyd's death, Keith Ellison saw the now infamous video.
They just slowly, methodically, I mean, everybody saw the tape. I will allow people to interpret it their own way, but it did occur to me that this was going to be a big event.
Ellison is the Attorney General of Minnesota. He's also the lead prosecutor in the case against Derek Chauvin and three other Minneapolis police officers. Ellison was a six-term congressman, a civil rights attorney, and an activist. For three decades, a lot of his work has focused on police violence. But he says he's never seen anything like this.
I know of no occasion in my life where we were in a pandemic with an act of excessive force, followed by massive protests, followed by looting and arson campaign, all in the context of a president who wouldn't try to calm the nation, but actually was antagonistic toward mayors, governors, and everybody else who was actually trying to solve the problem on the ground.
When I see these uprisings happening across the country, the feeling that I get is that a lot of the people that are marching in the street have the exact same feeling of that we're just tired. We're tired of having this conversation. We had it when Eric Garner died. We had it when Philando Castile died. And at this point, like, we're just so over it. And that anger is just exploding. What do you say to those people who are just tired and over it?
You know, if you try to ask somebody for patience who's been extremely patient, they might have some choice words for you, right? I just say to those folks, you know, we've never seen meaningful social change without people getting in the street, raising their voices. I say, be safe. Remember COVID. I say, you know, be peaceful. But by all means, exercise your First Amendment right, because if we don't have that, it's extremely difficult to get policymakers to implement the changes that could bring about a better set of circumstances for us. So that's what I say to them. And I don't ask for patience. I imagine this 400 years of people being denied in so many cases where there was no accountability. I mean, it just compounds, you know, that level of disappointment and expectation of an unjust outcome.
So now you've been handed the case.
Right.
Everything you do is going to be under not just a microscope in your state, but worldwide. What's your approach going to be?
Well, our approach is going to be not to worry about public pressure, because if you worry about that, then your eyes are not focused on justice. We're going to make a very strong case that the jury should convict. But we do understand that we've got to be very, very methodical because, you know, these cases are not easy. And, you know, Al, it's interesting. You know, from time to time, video comes out on these matters and people are outraged at what they see. And yet the cases do not result in the kind of outcomes that one would expect.
Why is it so hard to convict a police officer when we have videotape showing exactly what happened?
Right. So, but just for your listeners, let's just run the numbers. Rodney King, the first Simi Valley jury, not guilty. Philando Castile, not guilty. So to your question, why? I think multiple reasons. One is that jurors have a tendency to resolve doubts in favor of the police. The truth is that under the law, an officer has no more credibility as a witness than any other witness. But given our culture and our training and our upbringing, they are accorded with a certain degree of credibility. And so there's a factor.
I spoke with Ellison just before he announced he was upgrading the charges against Officer Chauvin from third to second degree murder and was charging the three other officers at the scene with aiding and abetting murder. He hinted at where the case was headed.
The public expects that people entrusted with role of guardian will be guardian. And that means intervening when someone is in distress, even if it is at the hands of another person entrusted with guardianship. That is a community expectation. It's not unrealistic. It's policy in many police departments throughout the country, including Minneapolis. The idea of duty to assist, duty to intervene, these are real things, and they're reasonable expectations for somebody entrusted with the role of guardian in our society.
So, since 2012, 2,600 complaints have been made against police that resulted in just 12 disciplinary actions, just 12.
I mean, here's one thing that I've known, you know, and many of your listeners know. There's a lot of great officers out there who join the force to help people. And yet, what is the benefit of doing the right thing? And what is the cost of doing the right thing? So, like, for example, if you have an officer who says, I saw, you know, my officer do something that is unethical, wrong, immoral. I told him to stop it. He told me where I could stick it. And now I got to deal with this guy and all his friends on my job every day. And the management, nobody else seems to be able to even protect me. I mean, the bottom line is, this is a problem. This is a cultural issue. And we've got to be able to create an environment where we keep the good people good, which means that we have accountability for people who do wrong.
Are police unions too powerful?
In Minneapolis, I'd say yes. I'm not an authority on all of them, but personally, I think that when it comes to pay, pension, working conditions, that there should be strong police unions, put strong unions, period. But when it comes to misconduct and discipline, when it comes to mistreatment of persons in custody, I think that that should go to the chief, and that the officer should have due process in the hands of the city council or mayor.
I have a feeling that for you specifically, this is going to be a really hard uphill battle, because, I mean, if we go back in 2007, Lieutenant Bob Kroll, president of the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis, called you a terrorist.
Yeah.
And this is the same man accused of wearing a white power badge on his jacket.
Yep.
So I'm just curious how you're going to be able to work with people who label you a terrorist to move the whole conversation into a better place.
Well, for your listeners, if I could give a little context, he was teaching a police officer training class. There was nobody in the room except police officers. And he says the people of Minneapolis are really dumb. We're at war with the terrorists, and but they just elected one of them. And then one officer says, wait a minute, are you talking about Congressman Ellison? And he said, well, we did just elect him. And so she showed courage, moral courage, and she would not let it go. And she pressed that complaint. He ended up having to apologize or whatever. But then later he told me he didn't really say it. But I'm like, whatever, man.
And this is all based on your religion. This is based on the fact that you're a Muslim, right?
That is true. That is the reason. But look, there are serious issues that we have got to deal with. And it has to do with the personnel. And it has to do with a number of things, including the president of our federation. We need somebody who is trying to protect our community, not somebody who's on some other agenda. He says he's going to wear his uniform to the Trump rally. The chief said, no, you can't do that. And so he shows up with some blue T-shirts that say cops for Trump, and then gave a big speech at that rally, which, you know, was not at all, bringing our community together, I'll tell you that much. And so this is the kind of person that we're dealing with here, you know, and I don't know what we do about it other than call it out and hope that the police union members select somebody who's really looking out, not yet, yes, of course, for them, because that's what unions do, but also for the people who they are responsible for protecting and serving. I mean, it's like a nursing union being against the patients, right? I mean, this is a crazy situation.
Let's talk about President Trump. On a call with governors, he has told them that they have to go tougher. He's threatened to deploy military troops if a city or state, and I quote, cannot defend the life and property of their residents. Given your own experiences, how would you respond to this kind of move?
I would just say that President Trump has been not helpful. You know, when he used the term dominate, you have to dominate. I was like, well, you know, the problem is that, you know, officers trying to dominate. That is why we're in this mess right now. I can only conclude he either doesn't know or doesn't care or some combination of the two about how to restore order. I mean, you know, the fact is the things that he says are actually putting officers, many of whom are pretty young, in harm's way. We need to learn how to serve community, how to work with community, how to build a trusting relationship, not dominate.
So what's been your personal experience with the police? Have you ever felt singled out because you're Black?
Yes. Oh, yeah. More than once. But, you know, at an early age, I grew up in the city of Detroit. And, you know, I just remember my father was the first one who told me, put your hands on the wheel. Don't talk back. Keep your ID with you at all times. Don't do anything they say don't do. And then he said to me, because they'll kill you and there won't be much of anything any of us can do about it. And that kind of scared me quite a lot. And but I was fine. You know, I mean, I just figured that was the way it was. He told my brothers the same thing. And that was the way we grew up. But then, you know, I had other experiences which sort of informed me. But I had good experience with the police, too. It was a mixture. But there were some unfortunate incidents that which I'll never forget. You know, as I got to be when I was a little kid moving towards my teenage years. You know, I remember my perception of the police did change.
Across the country, the level of anxiety for Black people is just off the charts. You were a little kid when the protests happened in Detroit in 1967 and 68. They sent in the Army and the National Guard. Dozens of people were killed. Does the response from the police and the government remind you of what happened when you were a kid?
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me that there's a little kid, 4 or 5 years old right now, just freaked out and scared to death and doesn't know anything about what's doesn't know why this is happening. They just know mom is scared, dad is scared. And when a little kid sees their parents scared, they are really scared, you know, because that's their person who protects them. There are indelible memories being imprinted on the minds of children right now. And I just think we really need to think about that as we decide how we're going to allocate our time in the next 5 months, 5 years, 50 years. And if we're really going to say this is an issue we must solve, and we're not going to quit, we're not going to wait till the next horrific, tragic episode. We're going to keep on working regardless. So that's what it reminds me of.
Keith Ellison is the Attorney General of Minnesota. He's now heading the investigation into the death of George Floyd. Attorney General, thank you so much for talking to me.
My pleasure, Al. Thank you so much.
We reached out to Minneapolis Police Union President Lieutenant Bob Kroll for comment. He didn't get back to us. Our story was produced by Michael Montgomery. What happened to George Floyd is bringing a new generation of protesters out onto the streets.
I need to go out because I keep on seeing my community being terrorized by the police state.
And later in the show, we look at the history of police brutality in America. You're listening to Reveal.
Support for Reveal comes from LegalZoom, allowing people to remotely set up documents like wills and trusts. LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys can also provide guidance over the phone. More on estate plans is at LegalZoom.com. And by Progressive Insurance, committed to offering a streamlined shopping experience where home and auto can be bundled together. Now that's Progressive. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.